So I spent two and a half months just getting my weight under control, doing it right, and it was a process. And was it easy at times? No, but you know, when you're, again, when you're thinking about what the payout is, it doesn't make any difference how much work someone says you have to put in, because that's the only thing that you care about.
Guys, this is Ryan Warner with the Spartan Combat Series here on the Spartan Up Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Our guest today is Matt McDonough. Matt was a two-time national champ for the University of Iowa, one of the great collegiate wrestlers during his era. And, you know, the University of Iowa is one of the best college programs of all time. So this guy comes from some of the best training situations in the wrestling world. And Matt talks today about embracing discomfort, something he had to do, whether it was cutting down to 125 pounds, battling through some of the top guys in the country. You're going to learn a lot from this guy. Hope you enjoy it.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Honey Stinger, made with organic honey and delicious ingredients. Use the code HSSpartan2020 at honeystinger.com to save 30% off.
I've heard you say that when you first got to Iowa and put on the Iowa singlet, some guys say, you know, man, I got emotional that I'm in the Iowa singlet for the first time, and I'm just excited to be there. And you were thinking, like, dude, I don't even care about that. I'm only thinking about wrestling the first match. Like, I'm not here just to make the team. You know, I'm here to keep progressing and keep going. So is that something that was just innate to you, or is that something your pops taught you? Or
It's funny you say that, because my dad wrestled at Iowa.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, my dad wrestled at Iowa in the 70s.
Okay.
So usually that's the same reaction I get out of everyone. They didn't understand that, and I make a point of it more now than I maybe did when I was younger, just because, you know, when I look back, you reflect more when you're done. It was pretty cool to know that my dad wrestled there, and it wasn't like he was some all-star. He started wrestling in ninth grade and walked on at Iowa, was really close teammates with a lot of these other coaches. You know, Tim Szeski,
mm-hmm.
was very close friends, still close friend with him. And he was behind him for a few years. And then his senior year, he got in the lineup, got third at the Big Tens, qualified for nationals. Actually, ironically enough, beat Jack Reinwand from Wisconsin, who became national champ that year at his weight at the Big Tens for third and fourth.
And now you're coaching at Wisconsin.
Yeah, so... that was kind of interesting. But going back to your question, you know, ironically enough, my dad told me stories about Iowa from the time I was a kid. So that, you know, you're talking 70s Iowa, you're talking Gable, the assistant coach, Gary Kurtemeyer, the head coach, like the beginning.
J. Rod, the grad assistant.
Yes. My dad's very close with him too. And you're hearing stories about these legends.
Yeah.
And it's all these camaraderie, you know, rugged crew. We aren't the studs yet. We're about to prove ourselves. And so I grew up with that, all those thoughts, but also grew up living 40 minutes away from Iowa City, being a super fan, crazy super fan. And I always wanted to put on the black and gold singlet, but then as I progressed and got older, I tried to be, you know, as objective as I could. And I was actually really close to going somewhere else, trying to make the, let's call it the smart decision, you know, preparing myself for life.
Where was that?
Northwestern.
Okay.
It was a really, really good academic school. Tim Szeski was coaching there.
Okay.
And I was really close. And I've told many people this. I was really close, but just something, you know, with the opportunity to chase my dreams, that what I've always wanted to do was right there at Iowa. And I was like, you know what? I gotta do it. I can't. I actually told myself, I'm gonna go to Northwestern. I'm gonna commit. Maybe I should. You know what? I'm gonna sleep on it. And I woke up and I was like, nope. And I, you know, in the back of your mind, I suppose you knew it the whole time. You're like, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I have this opportunity. It's, you know, it's in the palm of my hand. I have this opportunity to go to my dream school and get after it. And I did. And I think that's when I made that decision, is when I got over that whole fanboy side of it. The whole, like, well, I just want to, you know, be a Hawk. All right, I am a Hawk. That's not enough. That's not getting me any, you know, any accolades. That's not going to make me a legend in that room.
Right.
And so then it immediately, and I don't want to say immediately, but by the time I got there and was a freshman, it wasn't about, I just want to put on that singlet. It was about, well, I want to do what Tom Brands did. I want to do what Terry Brands did. I want to do what Mark Ironside did. I want to do what Mark Perry did. You know, I grew up watching Mark Perry and Ironside and Strip Matter and Jurgens. and a ton of those guys. I remember seeing Cliff Moore win it. Mm-hmm. You know, I was going to NCAA tournaments from middle school on, so I got to watch a lot of guys go to battle in that tournament, and that was my goal. I want to go do what they do. I want to go wrestle on Saturday night on that big stage.
Right.
And so when I put on that singlet, you know, that was, that's, it's, who cares, right?
That was the...
That's in the back of your mind that you're wearing a black and gold singlet. The front of your mind is, hey, I got to go punish this guy that's standing across from me because that's what I've trained this hard for. I'm not here just so people can see me wrestle for Iowa. I'm here so people can go ooh and ah all the time.
That's the minimum. Like, you're not getting it for the letter, you know? And so I was looking at your high school results, and Fargo, Placer, three-time state champ. How did you make the jump, though, from Fargo Placer to now you're a national champ? Was it a true freshman or a redshirt freshman?
Redshirt freshman. I actually wrestled 133 as a true freshman. I thought I was going to be a 33-41 pounder.
Dude, the story, even when I was growing up, of how much weight you cut. Is that true, or is it?
Yeah.
How bad was it?
You know, I mean, just like I said before, when you're focused on your goals, it's just another part of the process.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the most true way to describe it. Is it hard? Yeah. Did I do things that I look back and I'm like, man, you were crazy, Matt McDonough. You were a crazy person. Absolutely.
Like what?
I just, extra workouts. I mean, you're in a practice for an hour and a half, sweating your butt off, and then this practice ends, and you're like, All right, I gotta hurry up. All right, we're done. All right, I'm going to get my sweats on. I'm jumping on the Airdyne for 20 minutes, you know, and then I'm gonna jump rope, and then I'm gonna do stance of motion. Then I'm gonna go grab some dumbbells and do some extra curls or some, you know, a little pump. And just keep working. I'm gonna work until I lose the weight, and then I'm gonna go home. I'm gonna drink a bunch of water. I'm gonna eat some food, and I'm gonna come back and do some more work. There were many days where you ended up doing workouts that no one else did, or you threw on extra sweats, or you just, you know, you put in the extra effort because you know that it'll all work out. And if it doesn't, then you get a workout again. And that's just all there is to it. I mean, it's not suffering when you think about it in the right way. It's just part of the process. And I think that's where you see some people cut weight and have success. And everyone's like, how is that possible? Well, I mean, they're not thinking about it as cutting weight. It's just, they're just doing what they have to do to get ready to go compete. You know, if you have to make a certain weight, you have to make a certain weight. And there's a fine line between, you know, as you saw in even my career, you know, if you don't have your mind in the right place, weight cutting can be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, thankful for all that. But
did you have that foresight back then that you do now? Like when you were a freshman doing that, you're like, listen, yeah, I'm cutting weight, but this is just extra workouts. This is getting closer to my goal. Or did somewhere through your career did that hit? And you kind of realized that.
I think, you know, it was honestly when I made the decision to go to 25, because no one told me. No, the coaches at Iowa weren't going to have me go 25. They didn't approach me. I went to Tom and Terry my redshirt freshman year after the season because Dan Dennis, you know, had just gotten seventh as a junior, was coming back at 33. And, you know, you're like, well, shoot, that's going to be pretty tough to make the lineup to beat him out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, I've had workouts with him, and I was like, that's going to be pretty tough.
How strong is that dude?
He's a strong man. He does a lot of rock climbing, so as you could guess, his grip is very strong. He grabs a hold of you, you can feel it, and he's pretty explosive. But Charlie Falk graduating.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting here, and I'm like, well, shoot, I could go up to 41, where Montel Marion's going, and I had wrestled him, and he had beaten me three times that year, and I was already small for 33, or I could cut down and go 25, and I just went and told him, and he's, you know, there was no hesitation from the coaching staff of like, I don't think you should. It was like, you think you can make it, then show us. And I spent the summer not cutting weight, but trying to change my body, and I remember in the middle of July when we had our wrestling camps, it was kind of like I didn't make weight but I kind of made a weight where I was like, all right, I know I can do it. And that's when I knew, all right, I'm going 25, this is happening. And then,
you started that early?
Well, it was just kind of making sure like this is a viable thing. And then between, you know, July and August, you're just training, you're not really thinking about your weight, but you're trying to be healthy. And then come September, I mean, that's really September, you're not, you know, it's 2 months. So I spent two and a half months just getting my weight under control, doing it right, and it was a process. And was it easy at times? No, but, you know, when you're, again, when you're thinking about what the payout is, it doesn't make any difference how much work someone says you have to put in, because that's the only thing that you care about. And it's hard. It's hard for people now to do that because of so many distractions around. But that's the other thing about wrestling that you learn is, hey, you got to adapt. Mm-hmm. So now everybody's got, we got podcasts like we're doing right now. Yeah. We got social media. We got all these things. Figure out a way with all that present to have that same focus, to have that same energy, and to think long term, and, you know, you'll have a lot of success.
And not just 1 year, 4 years of that. That's that's a lot, you know.
Yeah, and you don't, you know, at the time you don't even think about it like that. I mean, you think about the next day.
Right.
You know, in the back of your mind is NCAAs, but you're like, all right, gotta do this and this and this today. Boom, all right, go to bed. Next morning, wake up, I gotta do this and this and this today. Boom, all right. You know, and you're thinking about, and that was preached a lot at Iowa too, is what's the most important thing? You still hear it to this day. That's ingrained in you now. What's the next important event? The next one. That's the most important event.
Mm-hmm.
This is the next one. The next one. The next one. It's always the most important event. You know, obviously, Big Tens, NCAAs, that's the ultimate goal. You know, that's always what I had in the back of my brain every match, is this is just part of your march to a national title. But it's always about the next, you know, the next step, one thing at a time.
And how much were you thinking about wrestling outside the room when you were on a run, or when you were like at your apartment? Were you trying to separate the two, or were you constantly
all the time?
Just consumed.
I can remember running. We call it a short loop or a long loop. I can remember running our team runs, and you're on that last straightaway on the run, and you're thinking about the next best guys at the weight, and you're trying to run them down. Are they running this hard? I'm going to run a little harder. Maybe they don't run this hard. Or you're even going more into your imagination. You're thinking about finishing a match out, you know, a takedown. You're sprinting 100, 200, 300 yards, and the only thing on your mind is getting that last takedown, or they're right next to you. You know, all my opponents are right next to me. All the guys that I used to compete against, you know, depending on whatever year you ask me, and I'll tell you the guys, they were all right next to me. They're running right next to me. I'm running them down. I'm going to beat them. You know, you're doing a rope climb. I'm getting up this rope. If they fall down, my arms are about to be completely burned out where I'm just going to let go. Well, if they let go, I'm not. And you're using that imagination. So, you know, when you talk about that, it's, you know, there's, I mean, it's all. I mean, if you're really, really thinking about being a champion, everything in your mind, you're almost in another dimension. Any workout you're doing is, I'm trying to beat everybody.
Well, even most of your day, you're spinning around. You're in another world mentally. You're walking to class, you're thinking about single legs. You're thinking about whatever you got to do to get ready, you know?
Yeah, and for some people, that's stressful. But it's only stressful if you make it stressful, you know? Some people, it's like, man, don't you ever take a break? And it's, yeah, but it's, I don't want a break, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I want this stress. You kind of embrace the grind, that, you know, that kind of cliche statement. But you embrace that discomfort where all the time you're, not anxious, but kind of at a heightened sense all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sat with Dan Gable. The guy's retired, and you still look him in the eyes, and you can just see into his brain is like, he's thinking about wrestling.
Dude, we started talking about the Owens match, and he was gripping it so hard, his arm spasmed, and he dropped it because his arm, like, locked up. He's like, if I would have held Owens' arm that long, I would have won the match.
I mean, it's serious,
though. Damn, let go of the mic. Oh, it is serious.
You never let it go. You never let it go. Your mind is always going hard, and, you know, that's why probably wrestlers get all these injuries, because they never stop. They never stop training until they're broke down, and they never go on long vacations. And that's not everybody, but some wrestlers, they never do anything where it's just like, I'm just going to, you know, it's almost like a life decision. If you change your life because that's what you want, and that's, you know, that's totally okay. A lot of wrestlers, you don't see that. They transition, but the ones who are still heavily involved in the sport, they're fanatical.
Well, you said it, though. I mean, and it's so cliche, but you really did like the process. You loved all that shit. It wasn't like you were doing it because you had to. You enjoyed it. So that's the difference.
You know, hate certain discomforts at the time. You know, you hate the pain of losing at the time. There's things that you absolutely despise, but it's always at the time. And this is what really has carried me in my entire wrestling career. And I still tell athletes to this day, at camps, clinics, in our room, anywhere I'm at, is for me, it was always about moving ahead. What's the next thing? You know, in a match, it was the most prevalent, but if I really think about it, it carried on to everything in life. Is it's like, how long am I going to sit here and sulk about what happened that didn't go my way? Mm-hmm. How long? And sometimes it's longer than others, but you know, when in doubt, just worry about the next point. Mm-hmm. And that's what I always did in matches, and that's what made me really enjoy, and I should say, when I wrestled my best, that's how I was thinking. Is it didn't matter what happened 2 seconds ago, I'm already trying to score the next point or get to the next objective, or you know, reach the next milestone, or you know, everything was always about moving forward. And you spend really much time dwelling, it's wasted time. You didn't analyze, you know, you reflect. And then when you're done, you never forget the loss. You almost remember the losses more than the huge wins. It's funny.
Way more, yeah.
You know, it's funny. You remember them that much more. And I suppose that's one of the sicknesses of high-level wrestling, is you carry those forever. And even when you're done competing, you're always like, man, I bet, I wonder if I could go out there one more time and strap up. I mean, I know I still got the skills.
Especially in Olympic year.
Yeah, trust me. Yeah, and that's what I had a really good conversation with Tom Brands about that. He's like, McDonough doesn't, like, if you're thinking about stopping competing, it's not going to go away. Don't think that, like, it's going to go away, or don't think that that means you need to keep competing because you have the urge. Like, I still want to wrestle to this day. You know, it never ends. It never ends. It's that competitiveness. Mm-hmm. You just learn to channel it into something else.
Yeah.
You learn to channel it into your athletes, or you learn to channel it into the business world, or you learn to channel it into going into the military, or just anything. I mean, you could name a slew of things. Go channel it into the stock market and mm-hmm. being a stockbroker. I mean, anything. You learn to channel that, and that's why, you know, your name, Wrestling Changed My Life podcast, that's really what it's about. Wrestling is something that is life altering for almost anyone. You know, you talk to people who you meet and they wrestled for a year in high school, and you tell them you're a wrestler, and they're like, oh, I wrestled for a year, man, I learned so much. I wasn't any good, but man, those guys worked so hard, and it really gave me a lot of perspective. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
So cool to hear that. I mean,
people light up. You know, you talk about wrestling, and it's like people, even if you wrestled for, like you said, a year or something, they're like, it was like the biggest thing to them. You know, they remember every part of it. Yeah, that's, and I've heard you say before, your wife says you have a sickness of like wanting more all the time. Like, you're never satisfied.
That's so true. It's true, dude. I like buying toys. Like, I got two hobbies. I got a few. I got a couple. I was a military fanboy. I wanted to be a G.I. Joe. So in today's world, I'm in the heyday. If I give me, like, win the lottery, oh man, I'd be in trouble. I'd be in a heyday. It's you know, you try to. It's good to have that balance. You know, that's why I'm thankful to have her in my life and my kids. Is you learn that balance. And you know, I just heard Doug Schwab talking about it, and I think his wife was doing a little, you know, one of those little interviews mm-hmm. with him, and he's like, balance. And he like thought about it for a second. He's like, yeah, you know, when you're striving for greatness, there really isn't balance. And it's so true that balance, you try to always have some, but it's hard. It's hard when you want to be great because you have to invest so much. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my wife and my kids help balance as much as I can. And I love being a dad. I love, you know, raising them. I love that women's wrestling is growing, because I have a daughter who she's tailor-made to be a wrestler. Her mindset, she's only 4 years old, and all she wants to do is roughhouse and, you know, do physical activity, and she loves watching it. But that's really humbled me a lot, having kids, and you know, just trying to impart my best traits onto them and hopefully not give them any of my worst ones. That's the goal, I suppose, of any parent. But that's
you seem like you
goal.
Really love being a dad, though, just from following your social media. And you talk about your kids, and I saw a video of your two kids. One of them has a chair on the other side of the room, and they smash into each other.
Mom had to go to the store for 30 minutes and said, watch the kids. And they got all set up. I didn't even tell them to do it. They got all set up, and I'm looking, and I'm like, this could be bad.
Was it chairs or what? What was
it? It was like their plastic kitty chairs, and I'm like, what are they doing? And then I did it once, and I'm like, and they're giggling, and I'm just like, all right, I'll get my phone out. I might as well record this. I guess if they're not going to hurt each other, I'll record it. And I got some more videos of, I got my daughter just absolutely walloping my son. I didn't post it, so I should. But she straight reverse lifts him. She's four, and he's not even, he's two. She's like 3.5, he's two. And she's just throwing him around, basically with like a choke hold, like a head and arm, like behind his neck, just rolling him around and then picking him up. And he's screaming, and I'm just like, eh. he'll let me know if he's really hurt. He's right. Got to toughen up. And
who threw you around like that as a kid? Because you had siblings that were 6 years old. Or did you and your dad roll around a lot? Or
me and my dad wrestled all the time. I always, and then one day it just kind of naturally stopped. I think he probably knew, like, yeah, I'm getting a little old for this. This guy's starting to get pretty good. I'll let the coaches beat him up. But shoot, from the time I was 3 to the time I was 13, 14. We wrestled in the living room all the time. Many a rug burns on the living room carpet, and many a screams from mom that we were about to crash into the fireplace and someone's head was gonna pop off. But you know, he imparted a lot of my mindset and mentality and passion for wrestling on me, of just kind of embracing, like we've talked about this whole time, that challenge and that struggle and that process of, you know, you gotta love it. What's you know, what is it being an underdog? What does any of that mean ever?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and always the, you know, just because he's bigger, does that really mean he's better than you? I remember when I was a little kid, because I was pretty tiny, and I wasn't super muscular, and I would always worry, this kid's 5 pounds bigger than me, Dad. And he's like, so what? You know, your technique's better than you can beat him. What does it matter if he's 5 pounds bigger? Does that mean he's better than you just because he's a little bit bigger? And you know, when you're a little kid, you're like, Dad, you're crazy. What are you talking about? But when you start to get older and hit puberty, and you realize, like, man, my mind, as long as my mind is stronger than this guy's, I can beat him. And my mind is stronger and my technique is good, I can beat this guy. And then you have success, and you try to snowball it. You try to keep that momentum going, where every time you have success, it builds you up a little bit. And if you lose, that's okay. It doesn't matter. That's just part of, you know, I'm still thinking about that next big opportunity, and always trying to elevate yourself. And you know, that's what I'm most excited for with my kids. And it's not even about wrestling. Honestly, I tell this to a lot of people. I just want them to find something they're really passionate about.
Right.
That's all that I really care about. Be cool if they wrestle, either of them. But if not, just something they're passionate about, and attack it with all of their being, all of their heart and soul. And that would be, you know, that would be really special. But I really do love it. I love being a parent. It's definitely the best part of my life, is, you know, my faith in the Lord and my family,
right.
My kids. It's just fun. I just love it. It's it's so similar to wrestling, because it's like there's never a time of relaxation or chill. It's always, you know, you're always.
Well, wrestlers are just roughhousing around anyway. We grew up in a wrestling room at the basement. We were always just rolling around. It's like, whenever I hang out with kids, it's like I get on my knees and we're doing takedowns and shit like that, you know? So, and I don't have kids myself, but when I'm around them, I feel that way. So seeing your Instagram and hearing you talk about it, I could definitely see that.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And I'm lucky enough that I got a wrestling mat in my basement.
I saw that.
A little.
Dude, how big's that dog of yours, dude?
Freaking dog. You've never seen a dog like this, dude.
You know, this it's funny thing. Because in my mind, she's a normal sized dog. You know, that's all. I see her every day. So I'm like, what are you guys talking about? She's a normal dog.
We said the mat. I had a flashback to this picture of your dog on your wrestling mat in the basement with a bunch of stuffed animals around it. I'm like, that dog's huge, dude.
she's actually. I don't know if she got fat this winter or if she's just still a growing girl, but she's officially bigger than me since the last weight check.
I'm 150. See, I told you, dude.
I'm 150 and she's 155.
See? Freaking so, huge, dude.
She's not small, but she's a big baby. She likes to cuddle. She sleeps in our bed every night. That's a problem.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Me and my wife, we have a king-size bed, and we each basically get, like, a cot. So we're not even a cot. Like, I probably get a 2.5-foot wide space, and my wife gets, like, a 1-foot wide space. And my dog just sprawls out. And every night, we're, like, kicking her, like, what are you doing?
Dude.
Even if we go to bed and make her sleep on the floor, we wake up, and she's in there. She's like a ninja. You imagine a 155-pound dog somehow sneaking into bed, and no one wakes up? I need to get a video camera. I need to do.
It's huge.
Like record.
Like a deer cam.
Like how does she do this every night? You know, it's awesome though. When I do stuff, I don't do it just leisurely. I do everything full throttle, and it's funny because all of this is like connected to wrestling somewhere or another. Like, my always wanting to buy more, have more,
right.
Get more, do something more when we're on vacation. I always want to go do the next thing. I never want to just sit around and relax.
I was gonna say, how do you balance that as a coach though? So now that you're a coach, you are physically doing stuff, but you're not the guy out there. So how do you kind of balance that? I guess where do you put your focus? Do you put your focus into building the relationships? Putting your focus into like researching things like that. Like, how do you spend your energy now?
I really love spending a lot of my energy in the wrestling room with the guys, you know, trying to teach them some of the skills that I learned, some of the mentalities that I learned about not even just training, but just how to approach, you know, how to approach wrestling in a way that tailors you for success. And then as far as coaching in the corner, I mean, I'm constantly trying to learn. I pay a lot of attention to other coaches, not necessarily during my match, like the match I'm coaching, but all the time, just trying to catch little idiosyncrasies and differences in how they act and pair it with how their athletes do and kind of see what works the best and try to also really see how each person functions different with their character, because that's one thing that I always heard about, you know, Coach Gable when I was a kid, is how tailored, like, I mean, you've probably heard other people say, like, that man could get in anybody's head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could get in anybody's head. I think you guys had was it Barry Davis you guys were talking
mm-hmm.
to? Or it might have been even Flo Wrestling talking to him, too. But somewhere he was talking about, like, you just couldn't tell the guy no.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about that. And I didn't know Coach Gable like super well personally. I know him very well, but not obviously like my dad did, but just hearing stories and then experiencing it in Iowa under my coach, and you know, Coach Brands, Terry and Tom, they just made you believe what they were saying so much, that buy-in they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Circling back to that, I remember, this is funny, I was at the World Team Trials in Council Bluffs, Iowa. I believe it was after my freshman year. It could have been a different time, but I believe it was after my freshman year. Brett Metcalf and Mike Zadek were wrestling in it, and me and Terry and a few others went out to lunch, and we got this meal, and then I got a cookie at the end, bought a cookie. And I remember walking, and I opened the cookie up, and I don't know if I took it. I might have taken the first bite. Who knows? But let's say I had one bite of it, and Terry Brands looks over at me like, McDonough, if you want to be a world champion, you'll throw that cookie away right now. And I'm like, Terry. He's like, I'm just saying. And I'm like, come on. And he's like, hey, man, it's your choice. Whatever you want. And I'm like, God, I tossed it in the trash can. But like, I could. It was one of those things. It's a perfect example of like the guy said it, and he knew how much I, you know, had those types of goals. And mm-hmm. you know, I never obviously was able to do that up to this point, but I remember.
You didn't want to let him down though.
It was that, but it was just like, man, if this guy says this. I don't know. Maybe if I look back on my entire life, me eating this cookie is the difference. Like, that's the way you thought, though. You're like, who knows? Maybe if I eat this cookie, it means I won't be a world champ. But if I don't eat it, I can't take that chance. You toss it before you get a second chance to think about it. Man. And that was the kind of thing that, you know, you could get a person to do when they really believe that. What you say, and it's, I tell you what, it is so much harder in today's world with so much information accessible mm-hmm. to get a guy to believe craziness like that. But you know what? It's really not crazy because it's like, hey, you have to be more fanatical and crazy to win now than ever because it's so easy to get distracted.
Right.
I mean, I can only imagine wrestling in the 70s or 80s when it's like, you literally are walking to your friend's house and knocking on his door to see if he wants to go work out. You weren't texting him or like setting something up for three days in advance or, you know, driving all over the place, doing whatever you want. You better figure out your schedule and you better have yourself accountable because who knows what everybody else is doing. Yeah. You can only worry about you. And, you know, you like, I can't even say reminisce because it wasn't my era, but you think about that and you're like, man, that'd be great. But that's just not how the reality is. And that's what I think is so important for coaches and mentors today to understand and athletes to understand, like, that is present. It's not going away.
Right.
We're doing a podcast right now. It's not going away.
Yeah, could you imagine Gable doing a podcast before the Big Tents? Or like J-Rob, his assistant, like before the Big Tents back in the day? No chance, you know? But
no way.
I don't think it's a negative, but I think it has to be managed in a different way, like you said.
It's just so different. It's so different, like you're saying, to think about. And it's, I mean, obviously you're not going to have it. You wouldn't have an athlete sitting in this chair right now. But it's, like you said, could you imagine that? I mean, it's so out there. But now it's really not that crazy.
No.
And so many more interviews with athletes right after matches. Like, you didn't have that as much back then. You got interviewed when they, like, won a national championship or something. But
right.
Or, you know, won the semifinals, but not like now where it's all the time they have a camera in front of them and you just have to evolve. And that's what, you know, that's what I love about the sports world, about wrestling, about all of it, is it's ever evolving.
For
it's
sure.
Ever evolving. And if you don't adapt and continue to change and learn, then you're going to struggle too.
Right. And you, before we move on, I know we're getting short on time. You mentioned Terry Brands making me throw away the cookie or putting on the conundrum. When you would wrestle him back in the day, could he still scrap?
Oh, man. I walked out of many workouts extremely, extremely upset because, I mean, my competitiveness, just because I was wrestling Terry or Tom Brands or Mike Ironside or Brent Metcalf, that didn't change. Like, you still want to beat them as bad as you can or whatever you can do.
Right.
So when I was an athlete, there were many workouts I walked out of pretty upset because – that dude gave me a butt licking.
he had to be 40 then, so he could have All-American, you think, for sure.
Listen, those guys are some of the strongest people I've ever felt in my life. they got some special sort of strength. you know, and it just carries on because guess what? As a coach, you're doing the same things to your athletes now. You're letting them know, like, right. Hey, listen up. keep your goals high and keep focused on you know, getting better, because you can always get better. And I think that's the biggest thing you learn from wrestling, you know, coaches, where there's that much of a disparity. And obviously at that point I was no slouch, but you're wrestling, that's a, you know, it's a two-time world champ, Olympic bronze medalist. That guy's
right.
Pretty good at wrestling. And that humbles you. It makes you really understand, like, hey, you just focus on getting better every day.
And he's been wrestling since then. It's like, since not 2000, he hasn't stopped wrestling. He's got 10 more years of learning on top of that, yeah. You know?
Yeah, so, and obviously they don't run, you know, it's not every day by then, but still, you know you're going to be in for a good one when you ask one of them to work out. And obviously I haven't been there for a couple of years, so I don't know what the case is now, but when I was competing, you ask them to work out and they're like, all right, and then you see them warming up for like 20 minutes and you're like, get your warm up in, you're all ready to go, and they're still warming up, and you sure ain't gonna be like, hey coach, I'm ready, let's go. Like, you're just gonna sit there and wait till it's your time, and you see them warming up, you kind of like, you think about it, you're like, all right, they're getting ready. Like, this isn't gonna be a walk in the park. Like, this isn't just gonna be a nice little flow session. This is gonna be a workout.
Terry seeing Kendall Cross on your face,
flashbacks, and you're like, all right, you ready to drill? It's like, yeah, we'll just kind of spar, and then you spar for 5 minutes, and 5, 6, 7 minutes in, especially again when it's two pretty good wrestlers. Like, well, I'm sparring, and I'm not just gonna start. I'm just not gonna roll over, and he's certainly not. So by the time you're less than 10 minutes in, you're going live,
right?
And that lasts for 30 minutes, and you're like, well, I sure ain't gonna be the one to take a break. Like, he's the coach; he can tell me when it's time to take a break. Like, I'm not gonna walk off the mat. I have to go until he says it's time to be done. And maybe that's unique to me. But
what's the longest go you think you guys went? You and Tom or Terry?
Oh shoot, 30, 40 minutes.
God.
I went when I was after. I just was in the lobby and talking to Ironside about it. And shoot, that man's probably given plenty of people this type of butt whooping. But I sure remember it better than he does, because well, I was on the receiving end of it. Like you said, you remember those pretty well.
Oh yeah.
And it was one of those changing moments in my wrestling career where I just learned like how capable anybody was of doing crazy things. I wrestled at the Quahog practice. It was a freestyle club, just postseason for basically all high schoolers in the Cedar Rapids area,
mm-hmm.
at the Co room and their old room. And it wasn't, I mean, it was good size, but it wasn't huge. And that thing would get packed to the brim. I mean, you get 75, 80 kids where it was wall to wall, and that you'd be falling over each other. And Ironside ran it once a week. It was just an hour and a half. And, you know, that was after my sophomore year. I'd won it. And you get a kind of good workout, because obviously it's so tight and you wrestle the whole practice. And then usually I was the guy who would run up and ask Ironside if you'd wrestle with me extra, because shoot, you got that good of a guy in there. I want to get that. And I asked him to work out. He's like, all right, yeah, we can go. And then we start going, and I mean, there was no drill, and it was basically, you know, we're going to go live, because I think he might have got in with some groups before that, but we were just going to go some extra goes, and we started going, and, you know, I was giving him everything I had, like typical high school kid, and this is a, you know, a veteran who's well past retirement from competitive wrestling, and you get a little high school guy like that, like, you gotta put him down hard, you gotta make sure he knows, like, hey, take it easy. And I never let up, and I just kept getting beat worse and worse and worse and worse. And by the end, all I wanted to do was lay on my back and bawl my eyes out. All I wanted to do, lay on my back and bawl my eyes out. But
it's crazy you had that high expectations for yourself, though, that you got that mad as a high schooler.
You know, it wasn't that one. That one was, and this was, like I said, a defining moment in my wrestling career where I learned, all right, this guy is just testing me. He's just seeing how long I'll go until I quit. And so I just kept getting up and kept going at him as hard as I could. And all I wanted was one takedown. I was like, if I can get one, then I deserve to get off the mat. But there was no one. And we probably wrestled after that hour and a half practice for 45 minutes straight. I mean, the place was gone. Everyone was, I mean, it was, you know, it was empty in there. And we kept going, and I was getting punished bad for 45 minutes, one go. And eventually, you know, I think eventually he stopped and helped me up or whatever, patted me on the back. And I learned a lot about myself. And that was one of those, again, one of those changing points in your wrestling career where you learn, like, sometimes it's not about the wins and losses. And specifically to training, but sometimes it's not about the wins and losses, and it's not just about surviving. It's just about, no matter what, you get back up, you go again. No matter what, you get back up, you go again. And you know, I had a very, I've always been a little bit of a loud mouth. Sometimes I'll talk smack to coaches or something, try to get, you know, I don't know, just whatever I can do to get someone to work out with me. I don't, sometimes my mouth betrays my mind. let's put it that way. My mouth betrays my mind. So I've learned to try to shut my mouth more and open my ears more. Been told that many times too. But I always had a very, very, very high respect for those guys that, you know, I looked up to and I watched coach and compete, super high respect. So for me, you know, wrestling a Terry Brands, wrestling a Tom Brands, wrestling even Metcalf, really, but wrestling Ironside, wrestling all those guys who in my mind were legends.
Mm-hmm.
My respect was just like, I'm not gonna disrespect this guy by quitting, by walking off the mat because I didn't like the way he was wrestling. Like, I'm just gonna sit there and I'm gonna absolutely wrestle him as hard as I possibly can,
mm-hmm,
until he says enough. You know, it wasn't like I was gonna make him quit again. And that's, you, as you progress, you learn that your mindset changes to be a lot more competitive. Like, hey, I can compete with this guy. I can wrestle. I think I can try to beat this guy. But that never changes that, you know, he's the guy I look up to. I'm going to go as long as he wants to go. I'm going to do whatever, but I'm going to give everything I have. There is no, I'm only going to try a little bit. There is no, well, this sucks. So I'm out of respect
better than you said.
Yeah. And that's the way that my mind has always worked to all those guys, is that respect. Yeah. Because I know what they've done. I shouldn't say I know, but I've seen, and now I guess I know a little bit more. But right. I still don't know. Some of those guys have done things that would, you know, make people fall over puking.
People can't even imagine. I can't even imagine. We both friends, like, it's to that.
Sometimes level. I can't even imagine the things that I did. You're like, you're nuts. Man. You know, the stories and things you hear, they sound like fairy tales. Like, what? That is a funny story you're telling me. Really, you're really embellishing, aren't you? But it's like, I can't embellish that. Like, that is 100% truth. It's too weird to make up.
Can't even make that shit up.
Right? That is exactly how it feels. But, you know, it's been really, really fun for my whole career, going through all the ups and downs. And the most thing I've learned, and this comes from just my upbringing and my family, is to learn from it all, to embrace all of it, the good and the bad. And you, a lot of people say that, but it's really, it is true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a to call it unfortunate, less than ideal senior year. I've had other, you know, family tragedies or mistakes I've made as a person, and you try to learn from it and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the benefit of all of that is being a coach and getting to try to, you know, resonate with these athletes a little bit. And the more you've seen, you know, the more things you've seen, and it doesn't matter if you failed on a small stage or a big stage. You know, I think about Terry Brands a lot and his whole mentality of his career and saying, yeah, I was okay, I did all right. And, you know, a lot of people are like, what?
Yeah.
But I know that when your goal is something and you don't attain that, there's always that, you know, that little bit of emptiness where, you know, you wish that you could just, like, I could just tweak one thing and I get that goal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you, and not even that, but you just got to try to understand. But the best way to, you know, to grow from it is to try to help others understand that and get to the level that you never got to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look back on my career and it's the same as other people who are really high level. You know, I won a lot, but shoot, I didn't get the real goal I wanted. You know, I wanted to, it sounds crazy, but I wanted to be a four-time All-American. That was like one of my biggest goals, just subconsciously, is to be a four-time All-American. And, it, you know, maybe more than being a national champ. I don't know. I say that, but who knows? You know, it's never changing, but
I mean, you know what it is deep down in your heart. You know, if it's four-time American, it's four-time
American. And you know, go win out your senior year. You're a three-time champ. You're a four-time finalist. and you have one of the top records, top statistical records in all of Iowa wrestling history. And to think that that what could have and what is will make you go insane. Right. So for me, you just have to accept what it is. But all right, what am I going to get out of it then? Mm-hmm. Because it isn't what I wanted. But why does that mean it has to be this black mark and I'm, you know, there's a piece of my heart and soul missing? Like, no, I'll fill that missing part with the goal of helping those around me. And it could be in any capacity. Obviously, it's right now it's as a coach, but...
Or making sure it doesn't happen to your guys, or do everything you... Or if, like, it's your kid playing a soccer game, that means a lot to him, whatever it is.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, for me right now, it's coaching and, you know, mentoring other athletes and trying to get them to reach that top step on the podium at the national level. Maybe someday it'll be at the international level, mm-hmm. Because I was never able to do that. And maybe it'll be helping my kids get through some, you know, really tough, adversities in life. Maybe it'll be, community service in a totally different way. Who knows? But trying to learn from those experiences in life,
yeah.
Because man, it's really, I spent a little time. It's really sour when you just like are just angry about something rather than accepting it and accepting, you know, the good and the bad and moving forward. And that's what wrestling's all about. I tell it at clinics, it's a struggle. It's life. Mm-hmm. Wrestling is life. I mean, you look at wrestling, definition in the dictionary, a struggle. I mean, shoot, that's, you, the older you get, the more you realize that is life.
Right.
It's a constant struggle. So the skills and the characteristics and the values and all those paired together, that it puts into people who've spent a long time in this sport, it's truly amazing how much knowledge you have and how much understanding you have of just the intricacies of the ups and the downs and everything.
It's crazy, isn't it? We talk about, and we'll wind down just real quick here, but you talk about life, like real life is someone, your mom dying, your dad dying, like that's real shit, right? A yeah. loss is a loss, of course. A wrestling match is a big deal, but when you talk about some real shit, you know, it's like that's what it prepares you for. Is the
yeah.
real
and
match.
What are you gonna do? I mean, right. Is your life gonna be over, or are you gonna find a way to carry on? And that's
exactly.
It's tough because everyone handles everything different. Everyone's individual, but just that, you know, and we haven't even spoke a lot about it, but the community of wrestling too is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what's happened in wrestling for tragedies over the last couple of years of certain people,
mm-hmm.
people that I'm close to, you know, the Stickley family.
Yeah.
I'm really, really close with them, and that, you know, tragedy of Eli Stickley passing away, but just the legacy he left and
mm-hmm.
the impact that had. And then you look at the support for Brandon Sorensen, a guy who got diagnosed with cancer. And the support, it's instantaneous. And just a slew of those. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more over the course of time. You know, Mike Durrell, guy I was really close with, how many people he impacted and how much, you know, that story and that tragedy kind of resonated with people whose life he touched. And those are people who are all, you know, close to my heart. But just how amazing the wrestling community is, because it's, you know, it's a family of understanding of the ins and outs of
suffering, yeah.
That joint suffering, you know,
mm-hmm.
talked about the book.
Yeah.
You know, Man's Search for Meaning. And that's one of the huge parts of the book is, if you know what your sufferings are for, you're mentally so much like, it can be so empowering when you understand the purpose of your suffering. And that's a person talking about the Holocaust and, you know, suffering that's well beyond what any of us even have a true understanding of.
Right.
But you're suffering, that's what you do in wrestling on a daily basis. Obviously, it's chosen suffering, but it just makes you so much more capable in the rest of your life and understanding that, man, I'm pretty resilient.
Yeah.
I can handle a lot. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, you lose jobs, you lose family members, there's sickness, you know, you lose wrestling matches. I mean, it all is connected, but you just, it's all about embracing that struggle and embracing those challenges every day when you wake up and knowing that, you know what, I'm going to be all right. I'm going to get through it.
Right.
And that's what's awesome. And that's what I love about this sport. And just the, all those characteristics that it imparts on so many people. And, you know, it's something that carry with you the rest of your life.
It's a great way to wind this down, brother. Dude, this has been an honor to talk to you, and I cannot wait to get this out. Matt McDonough, awesome. You're a bad man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
Year, I've had other, you know, family tragedies or mistakes I've made as a person, and you try to learn from it and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And really, the benefit of all of that is being a coach and getting to try to, you know, resonate with these athletes a little bit. And the more you've seen, you know, the more things you've seen. And it doesn't matter if you failed on a small stage or a big stage. You know, I think about Terry Brands a lot and his whole mentality of his career and saying, yeah, I was okay, I did all right. And, you know, a lot of people are like, what?
Yeah.
But I know that when your goal is something and you don't attain that, there's always that, you know, that little bit of emptiness where, you know, you wish that you could just like, I could just tweak one thing and I get that goal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Or you, not even that, but you just got to try to understand. But the best way to, you know, to grow from it is to try to help others understand that and get to the level that you never got to.
Yeah.
And, you know, I look back on my career and it's the same as other people who are really high level. You know, I won a lot, but shoot, I didn't get the real goal I wanted. You know, I wanted to, it sounds crazy, but I wanted to be a four-time All-American. That was like one of my biggest goals, just subconsciously, is to be a four-time All-American. And it, you know, maybe more than being a national champ, I don't know, I say that, but who knows, you know, it's never changing. But
maybe, you know what it is deep down in your heart, you know, if it's four-time All-American, it's four-time
All-American. And you know, go win out your senior year, you're a three-time champ, you're a four-time finalist, and you have one of the top records, top statistical records in all of Iowa wrestling history. And to think that what could have and what is will make you go insane.
Right.
So for me, you just have to accept what it is, but all right, what am I going to get out of it then?
Mm-hmm.
Because it isn't what I wanted. But why does that mean it has to be this black mark and I'm, you know, there's a piece of my heart and soul missing? Like, no, I'll fill that missing part with the goal of helping those around me. And it could be in any capacity. Obviously, it's right now, it's as a coach, but.
Or making sure it doesn't happen to your guys, or do everything or if like it's your kid playing a soccer game, that means a lot to him, whatever it is.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, for me right now, it's coaching and, you know, mentoring other athletes and trying to get them to reach that top step on the podium at the national level. Maybe someday it'll be at the international level.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was never able to do that. And maybe it'll be helping my kids get through some, you know, really tough adversities in life. Maybe it'll be community service in a totally different way. Who knows? But trying to learn from those experiences in life.
Yeah.
Because, man, it's really, I spent a little time, it's really sour when you just like are just angry about something rather than accepting it and accepting, you know, the good and the bad and moving forward. And that's what wrestling's all about. I tell it at clinics, it's a struggle, it's life. Mm-hmm. Wrestling is life. I mean, you look at wrestling, definition in the dictionary, a struggle. I mean, shoot, that's you, the older you get, the more you realize that is life.
Right.
It's a constant struggle. So the skills and the characteristics and the values and all those paired together, that it puts into people who've spent a long time in this sport, it's truly amazing how much knowledge you have and how much understanding you have of just the intricacies of the ups and the downs and everything.
It's crazy, isn't it? We talk about, and we'll wind down just real quick here, but you talk about life, like real life is someone, your mom dying, your dad dying, like that's real shit, right? A loss is a loss, of course. A wrestling match is a big deal, but when you talk about some real shit, you know, it's like that's what it prepares you for. Is the real ups
and what are you gonna do? I mean, is your life gonna be over, or are you gonna find a way to carry on? And that's
exactly,
it's tough because everyone handles everything different. Everyone's individual, but just that, you know, and we haven't even spoke a lot about it, but the community of wrestling too is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at what's happened in wrestling for tragedies over the last couple of years of certain people, mm-hmm. people that I'm close to, you know, the Stickley family. Yeah. I'm really, really close with them, and that, you know, tragedy of Eli Stickley passing away, but just the legacy he left and mm-hmm. the impact that had. And then you look at the support for Brandon Sorensen, a guy who got diagnosed with cancer, and the support that's, I mean, it's instantaneous. And just a slew of those. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty more over the course of time. You know, Mike Durrell, guy I was really close with, how many people he impacted and how much, you know, that story and that tragedy kind of resonated with people whose life he touched. And those are people who are all, you know, close to my heart, but just how amazing the wrestling community is because it's, you know, it's a family of understanding of the ins and outs of just
suffering, yeah.
That joint suffering, you know, mm-hmm. talked about the book.
Yeah.
You know, Man's Search for Meaning. And that's one of the huge parts of the book is, if you know what your sufferings are for, you're mentally so much, like, it can be so empowering when you understand the purpose of your suffering. And that's a person talking about the Holocaust and, you know, suffering that's well beyond what any of us even have a true understanding of.
Right.
But you're suffering, that's what you do in wrestling on a daily basis. Obviously, it's chosen suffering, but it just makes you so much more capable in the rest of your life and understanding that, man, I'm pretty resilient.
Yeah.
I can handle a lot. You know, there's a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, you lose jobs, you lose family members, there's sickness, you know, you lose wrestling matches. I mean, it all is connected, but it's all about embracing that struggle and embracing those challenges every day when you wake up and knowing that, you know what, I'm gonna be all right. I'm gonna get through it.
Right.
And that's what's awesome, and that's what I love about this sport, and just the all those characteristics that it imparts on so many people. And, you know, it's something that carry with you the rest of your life.
It's a great way to wind this down, brother. Dude, this has been an honor to talk to you, and I cannot wait to get this out. Matt McDonough, you're a bad man. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it.
This episode of Spartan Up is brought to you by Honey Stinger, made with organic honey and delicious ingredients. Use the code HSSpartan2020 at honeystinger.com to save 30% off.